Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
And so, Cindy, we talked about doing a couple of basic primers on wine from different places in the world, and we're going to begin with your giant prejudice towards...
French wine, yay! I love French wine.
Yeah.
This is good. A primer is awesome, you know. We need to all understand what the story is, so...
Well, I know you have a lot of...
There are a billion questions I could ask you.
You have a lot of basic questions for me.
I can start off with, why are we doing a primer on French wine? Why do you think that's important?
I was going to ask you a couple of basic questions.
Oh, God, of course. All right, let's go. Oh, goody.
So, okay, there are three meals a day, right?
Well, hopefully.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right.
So, which are your favorite French wines for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Champagne. Okay. Surprise.
So that now the audience knows from the perspective from which
the interviewer
is speaking. unless champagne is contained in the phrase, she may not be paying full attention.
Oh, that's not true. Okay. I love French wine. And I love the fact that there's tremendous history behind the wine. Should we start with some history maybe talking about the varietals?
You're asking some of the, like, why talk about French wine now? Why have a bit of a primer? One of the things that's happened in the last couple of years is that the American wine-consuming public has gotten a little bit away from they're much more of an experiential approach towards wine and much less of I want to be guided by a number score this is the accepted thing.
I think that's a big change, right?
Yeah, the level of curiosity and the desire towards wine is an experience, and oftentimes a shared experience. I mean, how many different tasting groups and tasting dinners
and
whatnot?
That's pretty exciting change.
It's a very cool thing. I mean,
it's more organic, rather than maybe intellectual or.
It's a change in our culture that's really a maturation in our culture of how we're and you've seen it happen with food.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen people's interest in many different things in food grow.
Oh, for sure, which is so exciting. I mean, that's the best thing that could possibly happen to a chef, so it's got to be the best thing that could happen to a winemaker.
Well, and the thing is that people are starting to figure out that, you know, it's a funny thing. This food and wine pairing has been a very big topic for people in the public recently. What is the thing for this?
Right.
It used to be I'd have to spend a lot of time explaining to guests in restaurants, I'd often use a very simple sort of analogy. You may have a very favorite necktie. You may have a very favorite shirt. When you put them on together, do you always look your best? No, you may look like a big jerk.
Okay.
Food and wine kind of works the same way. And so I don't want to say that the only place in the world, but maybe the place that started to sort of organize wine first was France. And it is a good place to start as a bit of a primer. And even though the growing wine in Italy is older, it was more organized first in France as far as how things are sort of classified by place. And classification by place remains classification by place remains the biggest difference, the biggest gulf.
Designation.
Yeah. Well, like how you know what something is or what it's called. You know,
right.
That's because, let's say... Wines that you immediately think of, and you're an American wine consumer, so you think of things oftentimes, even though you've had a lot of French wine, by varietal names.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
What are some varietal names that you know?
Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, but not from America.
Yeah, I mean, but in America, we know them by the names, and that's because we took grapes from other places, planted them, and we only really have we don't have a 800-year history of growing Grenache in this area in France.
Instead of, what, thousands of years?
Well, it depends on where it is. And this is where I'm going to sort of, even though the French organized it first, the Italians grew it all first.
Mm-hmm.
And the large majority of vines that are in France are variations on or adaptations of vines that came from Italy, which is really... super crazy interesting, and that's a very long, unbelievably snore-filled program to do for some time in the future, never.
We don't want people snoring.
But that's the reality of it. And this kind of, you know, the knowing things by place name is a big deal, and you really need to spend a little bit of time with a map.
Well, I think that's the thing with a French label. I mean, it's going to say bone or shut enough to pop.
But it's going to say it in things like bone sounds like B-O-N-E
right,
to us, right?
Right.
But bone,
right,
to a Frenchman is B-E-A-U-N-E,
mm-hmm,
which to my American sensibilities seems fancy and a little odd, and
right,
why did I enunciate it exactly that way? And mm-hmm, and we get a little bit scared of the language part of it, too.
Sure, well, that's understandable.
There's a simple economic reason that right now, for the exchange between the euro and the dollar, if you want to learn French wine and explore a little bit, the exchange between the euro and the dollar is more in our favor than it's been for the most part for a decade.
Exactly, yeah.
So if you're going to play, the vintages to look for are going to be probably 14s, mm-hmm, 15s, depending upon the quality of 15s. 14 in general is a pretty decent vintage in a lot of parts of France.
Okay.
12s and 13s would have been priced off of, and 13s largely not a great vintage, except for Alsace. But 13s and 12s would have been priced off of a pretty high exchange.
Okay. So that's exciting, though, that we have this opportunity
to taste wine from France
at a better price range. Yeah. So when it comes to varietals, what are we talking about in France? And how does it relate to the regions? Or does it not necessarily? Are they all over the place? What are we talking about with varietals?
They are all over the place. And some of them are familiar to us. The most famous regions in France, and there are four or five that really are the most famous regions, those are the grapes that we know the best. Bordeaux and Burgundy are the probably the two most famous besides Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
See, I got Champagne
Thank
snuck
you, Tony.
In. Yeah, there you
uh-huh.
go. And the grapes in Champagne are essentially the same as you see in Burgundy. So
okay.
Burgundy is a cooler growing region, and it's Pinot Noir and Chardonnay is what
mm-hmm.
you see there.
Mm-hmm.
And Bordeaux is largely red wine. And Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot are the two most important there.
Mm-hmm.
You see three others, but mm-hmm. those are the two most important there. Merlot is the most widely grown grape in Bordeaux
mm-hmm.
for a bunch of different reasons. And white in Bordeaux, Sauvignon Blanc, is the most important of those grapes.
Okay.
So those five grapes cover an awful lot of what we see in the U.S. for varietals and what have become popular international varietals. And that has to do with the success of Burgundy and Bordeaux for the last 150, 200 years commercially. And you know, wine is a commodity around the world.
So with the AOC system, what is it and what does that mean exactly?
Here is the terrible thing. Here is the thing that people start reading a book on French wine and they're like, oh, my God, there's a set of regulations. I'm not going to read. It's like
right.
reading the IRS tax
it's
code.
It's overwhelming, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, you're going to get a few of us that are wine CPAs that are like, oh, this is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder when this AOC was founded. Oh, in 1935. Who is the inspector? What did he do? Blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, no, exactly
uh-huh.
right. No
mm-hmm.
no one wants
I
to
I just want
that.
To drink the wine, ultimately.
There you go, there you go, there you
and
go.
And eat some good food.
Results orientation.
Yes,
right?
indeed.
Yeah.
I am a chef,
we chef
after
we
all.
Chef,
exactly.
We chef,
exactly.
So the AOC system is the appellation, okay, d'origine contrôlée, which literally means that the site and how wine is produced in that site is controlled.
Okay.
In other words, it's a quality assurance. If you knew that the eggs that you bought from Somerset County, Maryland, were always from organically raised chickens, and they're always coming to market within 24 hours.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It would be
yeah,
amazing,
that
right?
would be amazing, right.
We'd have to have some kind of particular FDA regulation or whatever it might be. The AOC system started in 1930. It's based on a system that actually began in 1905 in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, where you had to harvest at a certain time, late enough in the season, so you actually had ripe grapes.
Okay.
You had to get to certain alcohol levels to assure that the wine would actually hold for a while, and that you're being essentially regulations that you're a conscientious grower of the wine, and that certain grapes were used, and it's within a demarcated geographical area.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you were growing wine in, Sparks in Baltimore County,
mm-hmm.
which there's not but so much of that that goes on, but within Sparks, that would mean that there, someone would have taken the time to figure out what the 41 acres of best growing places for grapes would be and what the grapes would be that would grow well there. So if you bought wine that was called Sparks, you would know it was all harvested after September 10th from, let's say, Zinfandel grapes, or, you know, and that the alcohol level is at least 12%.
Okay.
And so you at least have a shot at knowing that Sparks,
basic things.
2015,
right.
You're going to get basic, you're going to get some kind of basic quality assessment insurance.
Okay.
So just having the name of that place on the label. And let's say that instead of just Zinfandel, but the tradition in Sparks was to grow 15 different varietals or four different varietals and to blend them differently, because in those 41 acres there were different soil types and different grapes did well in different soils. And the tradition to make wine that was more attractive to drink was to have a blend of those things. Then you'd know, you would know that was the case from Sparks being on the label. We're not accustomed to that. You know, so it's kind of a shorthand that if you begin to learn the map and some of the basics of the place around France, you begin to learn that shorthand, and it becomes, oh, the Bordeaux vintage is strong in 2009, and it's particularly strong in, say, the villages of Pomerol and Saint-Emilion and Saint-Estèphe, you know, and some of the satellite appellations as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would know that, and you would know that those are areas that grow a lot of Merlot. And Merlot is a year, it was a year, the weather pattern favored Merlot, if that makes sense.
Sure, it does. And
but it's literally just kind of a shorthand of, oh, it's an 09 Pomerol. Probably a reasonable bet it's going to be pretty terrific to drink right now with food that's good, you know?
Right.
What chef wants.
And with the AOC, does it designate food as well, or is that a different designation for food?
There are designations of all kinds of agricultural products.
In France,
products.
I mean, yeah.
Remember that in France, the wine is just an agricultural product.
Right.
Olive oil from Provence is an agricultural product. Chickens from Bresse.
So it's not called an AOC?
It is called an AOC.
Oh, it is. So they're AOCs,
and they're
but
542 AOCs for cheese.
Got it. Yeah, I thought so. I just want to make sure that it was AOC.
542 kinds of
that's
cheese.
That's awesome. God, you regulated. Have to love France. 542.
I don't know that
cheeses.
I will admit that I'm enough of an American that I don't know if I want regulations on 542 cheeses.
Oh, well, no. Only they have to deal with it. We don't. I mean, I don't want that here.
You just
want to
consume the good stuff.
I just want to eat it. It all comes down to these basic things.
But it does mean that if something has X name, there is some level of quality assurance.
You're assured something, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does this compare with the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, AOC?
To give you an idea, and I said France organized it first, the French system began in the 30s, and they mapped it pretty seriously.
Okay.
And an awful lot of what was mapped then continues to be exactly right. Think about how agrarian the society was at that time and how good these guys were. If something's been selling for a better price from this place, I mean, Bordeaux declassifications in 1855, and that is sort of the cornerstone of making it easy for consumers around the world to buy their wine and know what the best, quote-unquote, is going to be, because they had first growth, second, third, fourth, fifth, Cru Bourgeois, all that kind of business. Just having things, the difference between Châteauneuf-du-Pape and a vineyard right next door, Côte du Rhône Village, has to do with someone in 1931 going and digging in the soil and seeing where the soil changed, and talking to and interviewing farmers and drawing a very complicated map and also naming all the different places and stuff. It's kind of a crazy thing. In shorthand, from 1930 to 1960, France was alone. In the 60s, the Italians started. In the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, the Germans and the Austrians started.
What's the Italian
Spain
called?
Spain got a little more, the DOC or DOCG.
Okay.
Because Italy being Italy would take probably three programs just to get through what is a very complicated system of being not as organized as you might hope for, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, let's get into some of the different regions and we have a few more basics to cover, but we should get into some of the basic regions on our French Wine Primer on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine.